And now, you're tuned into RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
This is your RBLR Rays podcast. I'm your host, Zach Dobb, along with my co-host, Pat Davenport. Pat, how you doing?
I am doing good. It's almost time. Santa's almost here. I've heard he's loading everything up. Neander has been bringing us some new presents to play with an hour after we finished up the podcast last week. I'm not happy with you, Eric. If you want to like trade for Mike Trout or like Luis Robert while an hour after this podcast to just like keep things going, then maybe I'll forgive you. But for now, I'm a bit nonplussed with you, Eric. We were just talking about Jeffrey Springs and the Rays rotation last week, and how I think you said something about how we're unlikely to trade anyone from the rotation.
I absolutely did.
And then like even before the episode went up, as like the after the live show went up, we made a trade up from the rotation. So we're a bit annoyed at you, Eric.
Well, I guess it's just kind of like payback for the gift of giving us the Isak Paredes trade as we went live during the trade deadline. I guess he's like, well, you know, I gave him a little too much there, so we'll bite it back. So, you know, we have a love-hate relationship with Eric Neander on this show. That's not true. We love Eric Neander. But what can we say? Big news happens when the RBLR Ray show is going on. That's why you should be tuning in. And if you want to know when you can get your hour – wake-up call for big news to start happening for the Rays, you should follow us so you know when we go live, so you know when to be ready for big news to drop. This is just a service we provide for free for you as fans of the RBLR Rays podcast. If you are enjoying the show, which is going to be packed today as always, drop us a like on whatever platform you're watching us on. If you want to let us know what you think about what we're talking about, we got a lot to talk about today. We're going to talk about the trade news. We're going to talk about the stadium. We're going to talk about the best Rays pitcher list last year and do a player review of him. Who that is, you probably already know if you've been listening to the show, but if you don't, you're going to find out very soon. If you have anything to say at all and any of that, let us know down in the comments over on YouTube or wherever you're watching us from. We'd love to hear from you guys. We're going to get right into it for now. And into it is the A's trading with us to acquire Jeffrey Springs for, in addition to Jeffrey Springs going there, we also sent them Jacob Lopez in return for right-hander Joe Boyle, Jacob Waters, and first baseman outfielder Will Simpson, as well as a competitive balance A-round draft pick, which is a pick somewhere in the late 30s for the Rays. What was your immediate response to seeing this trade hit the timeline right after we got off the air?
So I opened up X.com, Twitter, whatever you want to call it, and I saw the Poisson tweet, and I went, ah! That was my initial response. I think it took a minute for the return to actually come through, the breaking Jeff Springs to the A's came through, and it took a while. And I was like, okay, we're probably gonna get something pretty good for Jeff Springs. And you know what? We did. We got a very interesting package. I gotta admit though, I was very, very surprised. I don't know about you, Zach, that there was no major league or major league ready bats in the deal, because it felt like the obvious trade that was kind of looming over the Rays offseason was to deal someone from the rotation to get some lineup help. That was like the obvious thing to happen, but of course it's the Rays. The obvious thing does not happen. The major league piece what we get is an arm in Joe Boyle. And you know what? I was pretty hyped to see Joe Boyle come over to the Rays, and I'll explain why in a little bit once we get into it in the more granular level. But I was really excited to get Joe Boyle. I'm not going to lie. I didn't know much about Will Simpson, and I didn't know much about what was the other guy again? Jacob Waters.
Jacob Waters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't know much about him as well. And the competitive balance pick is also extremely valuable. So I thought it was a really good haul for Jeff Springs, if an unconventional one, to kind of bury the lead here. I mean, Jeff Springs was, I guess, the most obvious choice to move, mainly because he is going to be earning $10.5 million in 2025 and $10.5 million in 2026. He also had a club option for $15 million in 2027. So he was... Yeah. the highest earner on the pitching staff and also is the oldest and is recovering from injuries. There's no guarantee what his workload will look like next year. We know he's very, very good, but he kind of has never proven to be more than, I'm going to give you five excellent innings, maybe six, and then I'm going to dip. He never really had a full season on a full starter workload. What if he's only going to put 100 innings up next year, whether he's going to put 120 up, I don't know, but I doubt he's going to be able to be a full-time regular starter for the A's next year. And for $10.5 million, it makes sense. It makes sense. What was your initial reaction, Zach?
I was initially frustrated, to be honest with you. I am kind of glad I didn't put out anything publicly, but I was privately very frustrated when I first saw the trade because it felt like a punt move to me, especially because I didn't immediately see the return, like you said. And even when I did see the return, I didn't even take a moment to realize who that was. I just saw that it wasn't a bat and was frustrated, to be honest with you. But this is another example of where, even though that there's that initial frustration, when you take a look deeper into the moves the Rays make, it's a very good move. We got in return for Jeffrey Springs, an arm, like you said, that is very volatile. We don't know what he's going to really be able to provide for us next year. He only pitched 33 innings last year. We didn't know he was going to come back at all. And honestly, he came back for less time than, you know, there was a point in the season where we felt like we were going to get him for most of the second half of the year. Didn't really happen that way at all. And he was fine in the innings that he pitched. He was pretty good in the innings that he pitched. But we really don't know what we're going to get from him. And in return for that, we got the most exciting arm in the A's organization, not named Mason Miller. So I'm pretty okay with that. Very much, we'll get into the granular. There's a very easy comp to make with this guy that I think we're both going to want to make. If you recognize the name, it's probably because you remember from when he absolutely like mowed us down earlier this last season. Had one of his best performances of the year against us, naturally. I remember watching the game, because I watched an entire game, and thinking, who is this guy? I've never heard of him, and his ERA is like a 5. But I was watching him, and I know sometimes the Rays sometimes have these weird games against those types of guys where we just have a really bad outing. But he was excellent, and obviously the Rays saw something there that they liked and have kept tabs on him. And had an opportunity to get him and got him. And I really don't blame him for it. The other pieces in the deal are also interesting. I am glad that if we were going to lose one of the starters that we project forward for 2025, Springs is the one I'm the most comfortable parting with because he's probably the one the least likely to give us 100-plus innings of those guys. Maybe Shane is also up there. So it, as much as it's not fun to lose a guy that you liked and you thought had a lot of potential, I think it was still a good move. Very interested to see what we get out of a guy that has so much talent in Joe Boyle.
Yeah. I mean, before we get into Joe Boyle, do you have any thoughts on Jacob Lopez being in that deal as well?
I don't care that much. He F7, he did a good job when he was called upon. We have other guys who can fill his role. I wasn't like expecting him to get traded per se, but I'm also fine with it because I don't think that he was ever going to amount to much more than a bulk arm in our org. The quality of the starting pitching that we have, it just is above what he's currently able to put out there. So no problem with it. We've got Joe Rock. I'm not worried about it.
Yeah, that's a good point that Joe Rock is kind of what Jacob Lopez is doing. Lopez could get it, sneak into the A's rotation, maybe. But sure. They're making moves there. They got Springs and Severino in the past week. They've got suddenly a competitive rotation in there.
They do.
But let's get on to Joe Boyle. And yes. Yeah, like you said, he dominated us. He probably threw his best outing of his career against us. Go figure. But if we can't beat him, we get him to join us. So Joe Boyle, if you haven't heard about him, he has got insane stuff. okay? He averages a fastball in the high 90s, touches triple figures regularly. He has an insane amount of rise on his fastball as well. Now, what we mean when we say a rising fastball is that it doesn't actually literally rise. He doesn't defy gravity, even though we are holding space on our roster for Joe Boyle. He throws a fastball that just doesn't dip, so it appears to rise. It has this like optical illusion quality. Colin Poche had a very, very similar kind of movement on his pitch where it seemed to rise and had this outlier lack of drop. Joe Boyle has that plus velocity. So it's an insane, insane pitch. And then also he throws a really nice slider. Occasionally he'll mix in something like a curve sweeper type thing as well, but he's very much a fastball slider thing. And he will, if it's in the zone, it's impossible. It's impossible to hit. Doesn't get it, give up any barrels. He gives up weak pop-ups and fly balls a lot, or he'll just strike you out, okay? Last year, he had an in-zone contact percentage against him of about 83%, which is not elite, but pretty good. And the quality of the contact that he gave up was consistently quite weak as well. The problem was he can't throw strikes. He simply cannot throw strikes at all. I think the most interesting stat about Joe Boyle is not that he has an absolutely putrid 17.7 walk percentage, which is awful, really bad. But I think the telling stat is that the swing percentage against Joe Boyle overall against him is 39.4%. So people swing at less than 40% of pitches against him. They just lay stuff off. For context, 39.4% swing percentage of anyone through at least 40 innings in the majors last year, by far the lowest. People just need to stand in the batter's box and they'll probably get to first base. You just stand there and let him throw a bunch of pitches and you're going to get a walk. That was the approach. They were like, listen, you're not going to be able to hit his stuff, so just stand there. He'll do the work for you. So the command is atrocious, but the stuff is definitely there. Now, this is the exciting part. We've heard this story before. A 6'7" failed, I don't want to say failed prospect, but a prospect that is struggling with command.
Underperforming. Really tall and,
yeah. Mainly command issues despite having wipeout stuff and needs some help. Cue Kyle Snyder's music. He has experience and is a tall, lanky dude himself, is Kyle Snyder, and has experience fixing tall dudes' mechanics to help them find the zone. And the Rays, in general, are really good at helping people find the zone with the amazing theory of just aim it down the middle, your stuff will do the rest. That's what they're going to try with Joe Boyle. Is he a slam dunk to be the next Tyler Glasnow? Which lots of people have kind of been like making kind of hints towards, that the ceiling is that he could be Tyler Glasnow 2.0. Yeah, he could. I don't think that's going to happen straight away. I think it's going to be a bit longer of a process than that. I don't think he's going to turn up and immediately be Tyler Glasnow. But I could see a world where maybe he starts the season in AAA because the rotation is still pretty stacked. And they try and make sure he gets the inning workload he needs, sort out those mechanics. And then maybe mid-season, he could be a guy that's in the rotation and or at worst, a high leverage reliever. So there's some great stuff to see here. The potential ceiling is Tyler Glasnow with less injury history. The floor, I would say, for Joe Boyle is like a middle leverage reliever. And the middle kind of area, the median of that, is that he could be the closer, like a Pete Fairbanks type, where like he could have outings where he completely doesn't have it, but when he does, he's just unhittable.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting to make the comparison to Tyler Glasnow, because the first year that Tyler came over from Pittsburgh, that first season in 2018, he pitched 11. He started 11 games, pitched to about a 4.20 ERA. One of the key things, though, in that transit over, was he cut down on the walks by a significant percentage when coming over. That is exactly the blueprint that I think we're looking for. The performance as far as the innings pitched and the actual like results are not as important as things like getting down the walks from like a run perspective, the results. So if he comes over and does kind of a similar thing, pitches maybe 8 or 9 games, maybe a few more if they decide to use him in the bullpen, but gets those walks down, that's a successful 2025 for Joe Boyle. That could then be sort of parlayed into a 2026 that is a little bit closer to what the 2019 from Tyler Glasnow was, where he was competing for the Cy Young before he got hurt. That, I think, is the blueprint and what the Rays would be looking to do with him. And that's the best case scenario. Like you said, there's a gradient there where maybe he ends up being the heir apparent if they move on from Pete Fairbanks. It's actually, there's a bit of a competition for that role right now. There's quite a few guys that are all, you know, going for that role right now, even in the current Rays rotation. So there's a lot of options there. And I think that's something they could definitely look to do. In a bullpen that's occasionally been lefty heavy, or they've had a lot of lefties out there, the Rays are adding a potentially powerful righty that could be, that could be of a lot of a value there from a bullpen perspective as well as a starting pitching perspective. So there's a lot that could come out of bringing Joe Boyle on. He's also, you know, it's another one of these situations where you brought on a young guy that's under team control for a long time, and we hope to see some really good things from him. We don't know what we're going to get, though. And I think that's kind of, you know, it's a bit of a microcosm of the Rays season as a whole that we're looking into 2025. There is a lot of boom or bust in this team, and Joe Boyle is another example of that. Ceiling is sky high. Floor is way down there. And what is probably going to happen is something in the middle. And the question is, can enough guys on this team rise a little above that middle to get us over the top and start to win a few more games and be a little bit more competitive for a playoff spot than we were last year? That's really where this is going to come in. Will Joe Boyle be a huge part of, you know, the 2025 team from a wins perspective? I don't know. But he could be, and I think that's kind of what the Rays are looking to add right now, is guys that could contribute a lot if things go the right way and that are not a huge risk from an investment of resources perspective.
Yeah, I completely agree with everything you're saying. I guess smarter people that know more about pitching than me might be able to make more insight into this, but a significant change that happened with Boyle between 23 and 2024 is that his arm angle changed. In 2023, he had a much higher release point, and he moved like closer down to the side in 2024. And like in a very limited sample, it yielded worse results command-wise. So I don't know if the Rays get him to go back to that or change up his mechanics entirely. I don't know. Smarter people than me will be able to work that out. But I think you're absolutely right that I think the Rays are wise to make this investment in Boyle because they have so much wiggle room in their pitching staff, right? We've got so many starters that if Joe Boyle doesn't work out, it doesn't matter that much. Same with the bullpen. If he can't make it work there, it's completely fine. So, like, if it works, amazing. If it doesn't work, we've got so many other good pitchers that, like, it's completely fine. But because Boyle's ceiling is there and is needle-moving, then it's worth the risk completely. And then in terms of Waters, he's a guy that's very interesting. He was at high A for most of last year, had one game in AAA, but he has decent strikeout numbers. He is also really struggling with command as well. So he's like maybe the Rays have noticed something in him, but like it's hard to say. He has a good fastball, a good curveball, struggles with commands, could be a decent reliever, I think. And then Will Simpson, really quick touch on him. He's like he was listed as an outfielder by Passan when the trade came through, but he's mostly played corner infield. Guy has good power, has really good power, doesn't have the strongest contact tool, is like a so-so fielder, so like a bit of a slow runner. It'll be interesting to see where the Rays put him. He played mostly in high A, ended up in double A in the back end of the season. I think he's projected to start the season in double A for the Rays. The quickest player comp that I could find to him was Patrick Wisdom. So, you know, maybe there'll be something there. But again, he's like he's a lottery ticket prospect, I would say. And something that is important I think. Maybe the second most important part of the trade is the draft pick.
Yeah.
So the Rays picked up the number 36 pick in the draft from the A's, which means they are now picking 14th, 34th, 36th, and 51st. So in the top 51 picks, that's four. And more importantly than the location of the picks and the amount of picks in the top 50, basically, is it gives you loads more wiggle room in your pool budget. Because you get assigned a bonus pool, for those that don't know, for where you pick. And getting the 36th pick adds a loads more to your budget, or a significant chunk to your budget, which means that they could go over slot on their 14th pick, or they could allow that to give them a bit more wiggle room in picks lower down. So it's really interesting how the Rays are going to draft this year, because this is their highest pick since 2017. So this is it's an interesting draft in 2025 as well. Do you have any additional thoughts on this trade?
No, I will say more to come on those draft picks. I think that's something that we're going to be talking about a lot more when the draft comes closer. It's going to be very interesting to see how the Rays take advantage of that extra pool money, because I think one of the things that's weird about the MLB draft relative to some other league's draft, there's never any discussion in when you're drafting, like for the NFL or the NBA, of, well, I don't want to pick him here because I don't want to pay him this much money. There's not really ever a conversation that's had when it comes to draft picks. It is a conversation that's had when it comes to MLB picks. And there are guys who are picked lower than they probably would be because they don't want to pay them what they're worth, which is a very weird thing that the MLB has as a part of their draft process. If you guys are interested in us breaking that down a little bit more, we could totally do that. Let us know if that's something you guys want us to get into a little bit more deeply when we get around to draft season again. But having the ability, like you said, to go over slot doesn't sound like a big deal, but it could be a big deal. Because if you have a guy that drops, that could be a top 10 guy, or maybe even higher than that, that drops because the team doesn't want to pay him over their slot, but now he drops into the Rays' range because they have that extra money, you could go get a guy that's substantially better than the 14th best player in the draft. It's really interesting. It gives the Rays a lot of freedom to really draft who they would like to have the most at that pick and not worry about how much they have to pay them. It's very interesting. It'll be interesting to see what happens there, and more to come on that when we get closer to the draft.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, the draft and amateur baseball is something that I'm not super clued up on, but in our RBLR network, we have some guys that really know their stuff. So let us know and we could bring them on and they could really break down how the Rays might approach the 2025 draft. It's a shame. I guess we didn't talk about it when the lottery happened, but it's a shame we could have actually picked higher in that draft.
Well, yeah.
We got a bit unlucky in terms of some of the players that were below us in odds ended up getting a lottery pick, so we dropped a couple of places. I think, like, if everyone got what they were projected to get, we would have picked 12th. So we actually
it was like 12th or 10th or something like that. Definitely. So I actually was watching it. I actually just happened to see that it was like on one night. I can't remember what I was doing, but I happened to see the draft lottery was happening. I was like, oh, I should watch it. And I, as I turned it on, I was like, we're like the 15th pick or whatever had just been pulled up. And the Rays were still there. I was like, oh, this is interesting. Maybe the Rays will get like a high pick. That could be fun. And then they like immediately get the 14th pick. And I'm like, okay, that's fine, whatever.
And you know what? The best place to let us know how you feel about the show, how you feel about the trade, how you feel about the draft and whether you want us to talk about it is on YouTube. We go live on YouTube. We're live on all the socials, of course, but if you go to the live YouTube broadcast, you could drop a comment on there as well. And that's the easiest place to get the comment to us. And if it's an interesting question or an interesting comment, we'll bring it up live on the show and discuss it. So if you want to do that, make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel and get notifications on for whenever we go live.
And I think it's a good thing that you mentioned that, Pat, because the next thing we're going to talk about is something that I have a feeling that the majority of people watching this show, if they are Rays fans, have an opinion on, because we're going to talk about the Rays Stadium. Yay! Everybody's favorite topic when it comes to the Rays. We're going to talk about the stadium. Some like moderately good news for a change this time. And that is what's the opposite of a heel turn in wrestling?
Face turn.
We had a face turn from Latvala during the I don't know if it's really a face or it's like a half face turn ish, where he ended up switching his vote. A couple of people switched their vote. The race of the Pinellas County has approved the bonds to go forward for the stadium. Yay, that's exciting. And then immediately, I can't remember exactly how fast. It was pretty quick. Like almost immediately after it was approved, the Rays sent a letter out basically saying, yeah, that's nice that you gave us the money that you said you were going to give us. We want more money now because you took so long to do that. So that's great. Another entertaining saga in the Rays stadium situation.
Yeah, I mean, it's good that the money has been approved, but basically what it does is it now puts the onus completely on the Rays organization now. They're like, hey, you asked for this much money, we've given you it. If you're really serious about building this stadium, all yours, buddy. The floor is yours.
Yeah.
And the Rays organization, I've not asked for a small chunk extra either. They've asked for significant money. We're talking nine figures.
$150 million is the number they've been throwing around that they feel like that has been incurred because of the delay.
Yeah. Now, if Matt Silverman, Brian Ault, or Stu Steinberg want to come on the show and explain how $150 million has been incurred by essentially what has been a 2-month delay on the money being approved. I would love to hear how that figure has been calculated. They say that it's now impossible to have the stadium open for 2028. Again, if everything's pushed back by 2 months, let's say plus some interest because like the whole project's a little out of whack. So like maybe it's not just 2 months, but it's not unheard of. And there was a great piece by John Romano in the Tampa Bay Times about this, but it's not unheard of for a stadium to open mid-season or a team to switch stadiums mid-season. I mean, the Blue Jays did that in 2021 because of COVID restrictions in Canada. They played in Dunedin and then they went to Toronto. Safeco Field for the Mariners opened in 1999 and it didn't open on opening day. They opened it mid-season. So if there's a world where we play in the new stadium in the 2028 second half after the All-Star break, that seems likely. I doubt that there's a whole season delay on a 2-month approval of the money. I'm very skeptical. And obviously I can change my mind, but the way that I've read this situation is that the Rays they've disappointed me. The Rays organization have disappointed me from start to finish in the way that this saga has played out. Whether it was the flirting with a sister city Montreal thing a few years ago, to the way that they've handled this current stadium, where you wonder if the money got approved 2 months ago, they were even going to try and wangle more money out then, right? Like there's a world where that could have happened because, yeah, I'm really disappointed. I think the money that they're asking for is unreasonable. And I think that Stuart Sternberg is signed a deal where he is responsible for cost overrun. So own up to the contract that you signed, buddy. You're responsible for contract overrun. And I didn't think in this saga that I would end up agreeing with Chris Lavalla. but he's made the point. He's like, hey, listen, we did, you know, delay it a little bit, but we've given you the money. Make it happen. And now he's said, I'm skeptical that he's going to make it happen. So now he's pushing for a sale of the team. Do you think there's any world where a sale of the team happens?
I mean, is there a world where it happens? Yes. I don't think it happens right now. And it's interesting that you kind of bring up what all that conversation around, you know, how could that money have been incurred? I'm going to do something that I never, ever thought I would do ever in my life. And that is I'm going to briefly defend Stu Sternberg and briefly posit the other side here just for a moment.
Do it.
The only reason I'm going to do that is because I actually I have a little bit of knowledge, not of this specific situation, but of construction and how things like that go.
Okay.
A delay, you know, the issue with a delay is that when you delay a project, what happens is that trickles down pretty far. And what it trickles down to is the individual contractors that work on the project. They now have to decide if they want to stay locked into working on this project or go find other work, because they are going to have to, you know, be doing something during that time period to make money. So now they have to maybe reroute and go do something else, which means you then maybe either have to go find new contractors or pay those contractors more to hang on for longer and wait for a period of time where they're not going to be doing, you know, anything, and pay them essentially to do nothing to keep them on the project. The other thing that comes into this is building materials costs, which change very rapidly and are very difficult to predict forward. If you believe that there's going to be any delay there, you then kind of have to go back to the drawing board of predicting the value of those materials, things like concrete, things like rebar, things like electrical, all that kind of stuff has to then be refigured and then bid on by people and all that kind of stuff. And that could result in that price increase. I don't personally think that the price increase that they are suggesting is quite reasonable. I think they're going a little high, but it is reasonable to suggest a significant increase, because if it's a 2-month delay on somebody doing a deck, well, the price of that deck may have increased through all those things we just talked about by like a couple $100. And that doesn't seem like a lot. The problem is when you multiply that by, you know, magnitudes and magnitudes to build a stadium and a complex that the Rays are discussing, that's where that money could come from. That being said, I don't think the money is actually that high what they've incurred. Number two, I agree with you. The Rays signed a contract to incur overage. Too bad. Like I at this point, I have no sympathy for billionaires. Which I don't know if Stu's a billionaire. Technically, he's probably just a high millionaire. I don't really know. But either way, he has a lot of money. I don't really have any sympathy for him from that perspective. So while I will say, yes, there is some real reality to the fact that significant costs may have been incurred by this delay, I also don't think that it's quite as much as they're making. I do buy that they couldn't be ready by opening day 2028. I buy that. I buy they might need till the middle of 2028, maybe the All-Star break. I can buy that. I don't buy $150 million. I do think that Stu should eat the money. And if he doesn't want to eat the money, if he says he can't afford it, he should sell the team.
Yeah, that's a really good breakdown of how the money could come across. I think – it's clear, and either way, whether he sells the team or not, Stu's still going to profit from whatever gets developed on that land.
Correct.
He's going to stake in it. So I could see a world where he goes, I'll cut my losses and make the money from the team. But I just don't know how it's going to play out. There's a million ways it could play out. What do you think is like the most likely scenario that happens from here? Do you think Stu eats it, or do you think he cancels the project, or do you think he sells the team?
The most likely outcome to me is Stu pays most of it. The county kicks in a little bit as a good faith thing at some point during the process, and they build the stadium. I don't expect Stu to sell. If he actually put the team up for sale, certainly people would come up that might want the team. We don't really have any knowledge of anybody who's like knocking up, trying to break down the door to buy the team. So, I mean, I don't, but that could all generate quickly, but I don't know. I don't expect him to sell at this time. My thought was always that he would look to sell once the stadium was complete. Once that was a completed asset, he might look to sell then. I don't expect to see him sell anytime soon. I expect him to cover most of it, and then the Pinellas will kick in a little bit as a good faith thing to keep the project moving.
Yeah. Well, I guess we're going to have to once again watch this space. Just as a last little asterisk on this, Stu Sternberg's net worth is estimated at $800 million. The Tampa Bay Rays franchise is currently estimated about $1.25 billion. Mm. And Stu bought the team for $200 million back in 2004.
Yeah.
So that's 6 times the value we bought it for. So he could sell it and feel pretty good about that.
Wow. Any sympathy I ever had for him just evaporated into thin air when you said that. Wow. Yeah, that's a, yeah. Any sympathy I ever had just completely was gone. I wonder how much of his net worth is like, is the Rays.
I'm not sure. I mean, he's got a lot of shares, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And I guess like, it's a weird business valuations are a weird thing. Where like maybe is Stu not, is he 100% owner? I might be wrong on that.
He's not 100%. I don't think he's
a majority shareholder, but not.
Yeah.
So because he doesn't own the whole thing, maybe
he's majority owner Stu Sternberg.
Yes. Yeah. So I try not to talk. I hate how much we've had to talk about the business side of baseball, man. it's not what I went to school for.
You know what I never hate talking about ever? shop.rblarsports.com. I never hate talking about it. And you know why I never hate talking about it? Because anytime you go over to shop.rblarsports.com, you will find the best merch inspired by your favorite Tampa Bay sports teams, the Rowdies, Bucks, Lightning, and Rays. It's all there for you. If you are also disgusted with it, with talking about the business of baseball, you want to get back to the fandom side of things, shop.rblrsports is the place for you. Use promo code FLAPPY, F-L-A-P-P-Y, for 10% off your entire order there. shop.rblrsports.com, promo code FLAPPY, F-L-A-P-P-Y.
I'll tell you what, that's a good bit of business. That's some good business.
Excellent business.
Yeah, you know, that's the business I'm all about.
It's the business I'm all about. There was a guy on the Rays this last year that was all about the business of pitching and all about the business of filling out the value that we hoped he might. And that someone who was about that business was Zach Littell. That was a really long lead up. Zach Littell, he is our next player review. A season that I think we all hoped he could have, hoped he would have, and he actually did. There's a lot of, you know, so many times we talk about what we hope a guy can do and think he might be able to do. Zach Littell actually did pretty much exactly what we hoped and dreamed he could do this year.
Yeah, he led the team in WAR, out of pitches on the team anyway. He picked up 2.3 Fangraphs WAR, which was, did you, I mean, I know some people in our RBLR group chat that would have predicted that, but I don't think many Rays fans would have said Zach Littell would be the most valuable pitcher to the Rays in 2024. And lo and behold, he was. And he did that through, I think, two things. One, limiting walks. He was very hard to get a free pass off of. And two, giving you a lot of innings. He led the team in innings pitched too. I think if Zach Eflin stayed on the team for the full year, it would have been a tight race between those two. But Littell put up 156 innings. So he was never like completely awful. He had one or two dud starts, but he would always come out there and give you 5 to 7 innings, and he would grind one out for you, which is super, super valuable. The fact that he could do that and remain healthy for the majority of the season. That's where the value for Zach Littell came from, is that you always had a chance when he was on the mound. He'd grit one out for you, and he'd do it every 5 days. I think that's the headline for this player review when it comes to Zach Littell.
Yeah, and I mean, right next to that is exactly what you talked about, 94th percentile walk percentage. That's the kind of guy that is going to can have a long career in MLB. If you can pitch 150 to 160 innings and have a top 10% of the league, top 5% of the league walk percentage, you will be very successful in Major League Baseball. And that is exactly what Zach Littell did this last season. A guy that we really, really needed as injuries mounted, as we traded Tyler Glasnow before the season began. He was a guy that we really needed to perform like we kind of hoped and dreamed that he could. And he came out and did exactly what we thought he could and might be able to do. And it was really, really fun to watch, because it's a guy that we talked about a lot to start the season, as a guy that we were kind of counting on to be that guy with Tyler Glasnow moving on, us having a very young rotation and an experienced rotation. He was kind of that guy, and he did it. I mean, he had a small injury bump in the middle of the season. He had a little bump down in performance as well, but he was able to come back and finish the year very, very strong. He cemented himself a position in the Rays rotation. He's made himself a trade candidate for some people thought he would get traded before the season began. I think with Springs being traded, that drops to basically zero. But he could absolutely be a really, really strong asset at the trade deadline if they decide to trade him. Or he could just be an anchor for this rotation in a good way, a stronghold for this rotation, a guy who you know is going to be able to go out there, give you solid innings, give you solid performance, something that is so important around this rotation where there's a lot of variance guys, a lot of guys that could be really, really good and but do have some potential to have some rough outings here and there. You have a rock-solid guy like Littell kind of grounding the middle of that rotation. What a great year for him.
Yeah, and my favorite thing about Zach Littell is how like he's not a stuff guy at all. He wasn't even like a ground ball guy. But he was so efficient in everything that he did. So he didn't give up many walks, but also like he was really good at getting early contact, getting through at bats really quickly. And that's just because he kept throwing like not crazy stuff, but he would just you never knew what he was going to throw because he had a five pitch mix and he would use all five of those pitches really, really frequently. I mean, just in 2024, he threw the slider 35% of the time, split 23% of the time, the fastball 22% of the time, a four seam fastball 22% of the time, sinker 15% of the time, and even factored in a sweeper every 5% as well. So he would just throw loads of stuff with loads of different movement profiles as well. Most of it towards the third base side, but occasionally that sweeper and that slider that he used the most would go towards first base. So while the stuff didn't have crazy movement, it was just you never knew which way the ball was going to go, what velocity was going to come at, but people loved to swing at it. And therefore, because they swung at it and they weren't entirely sure what it was, they were making lots of contact and putting the ball in play really frequently. In fact, in terms of pitches that threw at least 100 innings last year, Zach Littell was in the top 15 in most swung at pitches in baseball in terms of swing percentage. They swung 51.6% of the time. And if you look at all the like players with over 100 innings that are also in that mix, these are all also successful pitchers. Shota Imanaga leads the league there. George Kirby and Brian Wu are there. Garrett Crochet is there. Uvalde, Cutter Crawford, Tarek Skubal, the Cy Young winner, Pablo Lopez just below him. These are all people that are successful. Getting hitters to swing at your stuff frequently is really good because more often than not, they're not going to make the best contact on it. So Littell, super efficient, and that's what I love about him. So he kind of, if you look at his StatCast page, lots of blue circles, to be honest. Lots of like bad XERA, bad XBA, bad fastball velo, bad exit velocity averages, but doesn't walk guys, gets a lot of chases, lots of soft contact. Or if not soft contact, contact that will lead to outs very quickly. He's not wasting his time with you, which is what I love about him. I think he was so valuable. He wasn't an ace, but he felt like the steadiest hand in the rotation. I would the hard thing is to grade him. I it's hard to give him an A because like none of his numbers were like ace stuff, but really solid season and give him a B+.
The reason that I would give him an A is because he pitched 156 innings, and not just because that's a valuable amount of innings, but that's the most innings he's ever pitched at the major league level or any level. He's never pitched 156 innings in a full season. He did that. He provided a lot of value while doing it. I'm going to give him an A also because we didn't really know, like we had seen this experiment start to work when we brought him over in 2023. We thought it might work. We thought it might be this, you know, what we are hoping and praying and being a starter that can be this kind of value, but he hadn't done that at the major league level really ever. He did it a little bit in some of the lower levels, some of the lower leagues, but he never was really a full-time starter until this season. And he did it at a level that is one of the best in baseball. One, you know, a top, you know, 30, 40 pitcher. And did two things that are really important, which is get guys to swing and not walk guys, both of which are very, very important if you're going to have success as a pitcher. Did him as some of the best in baseball. So to me, that's an A. He doesn't have the velocity or even the stuff necessarily to I don't know that he'll ever be a Cy Young candidate necessarily. But like with the tools he is given, he is one of the best pitchers, you know, that we've seen in a Rays uniform. he does a lot with what he has available to him, and he was able to do it over a large sample size, which is something that we really needed last year and something that's going to be really, really important for this year. He gets an A from me, and I think it'll be really, really interesting to see if he can replicate that performance in 2025.
Yeah, and that's the most interesting point to me and why I thought he was the most likely to be traded. I guess the great command gives you a good flaw. But I do wonder if he got a little bit lucky with some of it, because he gave up quite a bit of hard contact, didn't give up tons of ground balls. I wonder how sustainable it is. I might get told off priorly about questioning the sustainability of Zach Littell. I think he's a lock, you know, to health permitting, to be, again, a candidate to lead the Rays in innings pitch next year, especially now with Springs gone. I don't think Springs was competing with him for the innings pitched total, but I do think there was a world where Littell might struggle to get a look into the rotation. But now that he's definitely going to be in that somewhere between two and four in the rotation, I think he's going to give a lot of innings. Will he be this effective? I don't know. Personally, I think next year he may see an ERA that creeps into the fours. But I still think you'll be first or second in WAR accrued just by the pure volume that he'll give us.
Yeah, I mean, his BABIP was 311, which was higher than either of the last two seasons for him. So, I mean, you know, a pitcher like him is always going to rely a little bit on getting some good luck at some level. I think he got pretty median average luck for him. I don't think there's going to be a huge, but the truth is he pitched to a 3.63 ERA. So a 4.01, 4.02, 4.03 ERA is not out of the realm of possibility whatsoever. I think the key for me is I still think he provides two wins worth of value while doing that, you know?
Yeah. So I think so.
I think all things considered, it's an A for me for him for this season. Really excited for what he'll do this next year. I think he's going to be kind of the anchor for this rotation, because, you know, it's funny. Like, I keep seeing Shane McClanahan. I love Shane. I keep seeing him being ranked really highly on like top 100 lists or like best pitchers in MLB lists. And I'm like, have you guys never seen someone coming off Tommy John and how they perform in their first season back? And to think that he's going to just be right back there at the level that he was when we last saw him. I just think it's a little bit unrealistic to say he's going to be a top, you know, whatever pitcher in baseball right after Tommy John. They're going to need guys like Zach Littell, because McClanahan is going to eventually be really good, but not right away. So the importance of a guy like him being able to replicate this performance from last year cannot be understated.
Yeah, 100%. He's going to be so important. If he goes down, you're going to really feel the impact of it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. 100%.
So you're 100% right on Shane as well. He's not going to go more than like 125 innings, I don't think. I'd be super surprised.
I would be shocked. Yeah.
I would love that if it did happen, but it's unlikely. It's really unlikely. And that's why you're going to need guys like Littell, who are going to give you six innings, and you know you're going to get six innings, maybe more on a good day. So, yeah, I mean, now the rotation – I mean, how would you line it up? McClanahan? Would you start McClanahan on opening day?
That's a really tough question. I would be thinking, my thought would be, it's a really tough decision between Pepio and Littell for me. That's who I would be looking at for opening day starter. I might have to think about that one. I think that one is probably going to, you know, I think that one may still be up for discussion, like through training camp. Like, I think if you asked, you know, Eric Neander right now or Kevin Cash, who is going to be the opening day starter, you might get a different answer if you ask him again on opening day. You know, I mean, yeah, I think right now I'd probably start Pepio on opening day, and then I'd probably go Pepio, McClanahan, Littell. But that could change. You know, if McClanahan shows up to spring training and is the guy again, I mean, could absolutely see him starting opening day. But my money right now would be on Ryan Pepio.
I've got Pepio penciled in as the opening day starter right now. But of course, a lot can change. We still got the rest of the offseason to go. We might see some movement. We might see someone come in, someone leave. And of course, spring training, you know, never always predict at least one guy to get hurt in spring training.
I also wouldn't put it past the Rays to reward Littell for last year with an opening day start, with the idea that there's a pretty good chance that Ryan Pepiot is going to get some opening day starts in his career with the Rays. This may be Zach Littell's only chance for that. So I could I could see a world where they reward him for his performance last year with that opening day start. So who knows?
Yeah, who knows? But keep an eye on it. Keep an eye on it for sure.
What do you guys think out there that are watching? Do you have an opinion on who's going to be starting opening day for the Rays? We'd love to know if you've got a thought.
Definitely. Well, folks, I think we start to our opening day is against the Rockies, I believe.
It is. So, which got bumped back a day.
Yeah, it got bumped back a day because they're going to need some time to change it from a Yankee stadium to a Rays stadium, which is a weird sentence to say.
Yeah, very weird.
Steinbrenner Field opening day, baby.
Yep, it's the best case scenario given the circumstances.
Yeah, I've talked myself into getting low-key excited for Steinbrenner Field. I'm not excited about the rainouts, but other than that, the short porch, I'm kind of having it. Like, I'm imagining Richie Palacios and Josh Lowe getting some power bumps from the short porch.
As a Brandon Lau enjoyer, I'm a big fan of the short porch. And as a Jonathan Aranda enjoyer and a Josh Lowe enjoyer, I definitely, you know, and a Richie Palacios enjoyer, honestly, too. He is my guy that I want the most. Like, if Richie Palacios ends up earning the starting spot in left field, I will be psyched because he seems like a really good guy. He's really embraced Tampa. If he finds a way to like use the short porch a little bit to get a little extra power bump and like lock down the left field, that would be awesome. I'd be totally up for that. He seems like a really, really cool guy.
Definitely. I love Palacios and I wish him nothing but, and he does everything right at the plate. He has such a good approach at the plate. If he could get like 15 home runs this year, I'd be so happy.
That'd be really cool. That'd be really fun. And you know, who knows? I mean, he absolutely could do that. And again, when we talk about, we've talked so much about the, you know, what's next year going to look like. And we've talked about the issues in the outfield. The reason we've talked about that so much is because there's nobody that we have like 100% confidence in. We've seen their performance before to know they're going to lock in and take that position. There's a bunch of guys that could, though. Like Palacios could go out there and lock that position down and have a great season. And if that happens, I would be ecstatic and be thrilled. And I think it could happen. We just don't have any, you know, evidence beyond what we, you know, a small sample size from last year to sort of extrapolate that forward to say, yes, this will happen. So that's where the kind of, you know, concern comes from. But I think Palacios absolutely could take that position over and be a really, really, really fun guy doing it. It would be a lot of fun to watch him like take that position over. It'd be really cool.
Last question before we go, really quick. You can give me a one-word answer if you want. Do the Rays add a bat before spring training starts?
Yes, they'll add somebody. I don't know who it'll be. It'll either be the most unexpectedly large deal ever in Rays history, or a very Raysian, you know, some guy from somewhere that I don't even know about yet that is going to come in and hit 20 bombs. I would never have heard of it before. One or the other.
You've heard it here first, folks. Zach Dobb said that the Rays are going to sign Pete Alonso to a 5-year deal to play left field.
That's the plan. He can run, I'm sure, right? You know.
Sure. Why not?
Sure. Let's do it. Oh, boy. The Rays have never ceased to surprise me when it comes to the moves that they make. I would like to be surprised in a – I don't want to say a positive way because there are positives from the spring trade. I'd like to be surprised with an addition, not a subtraction. I haven't been like shocked by a Rays addition since Nelson Cruz. So I would like to be shocked again by an addition. So we'll see.
We'll see. We'll absolutely see. And I think we should call it here for the holidays.
We should call it here for the holidays. And I would love to thank everyone that has watched, that has been with us. This is going to be our second to last show for 2024. Thank you all for watching us throughout the entire year. We really appreciate everybody who's been with us all throughout the year. We'll see you guys one more time in 2024. If you enjoyed the show, drop us a like. If you want to know every time we go live, drop us a follow. It's free. Helps us out so much. To let us know that you enjoy the show and want to keep watching it. Thank you, everybody who's sticking with us through this journey. Whatever weird trades, whatever weird moves are going to be made by the Rays during the offseason, we'll be right here to talk about it. And we hope that you'll be here with us talking about it as well. For now, raise up.
Raise up.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLI Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.